Hello, and welcome to the Inside Reviews podcast for February the 3rd, 2023. This is episode number 148. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about Genesis X convertible getting the production green light, Nissan Max Out Digital Concept gets made in real life, and Toyota's chief scientist argues against going all EV. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the preternatural Mr. Tom Logney, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the mesmerizing Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. So welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Greetings. All right. So let's kick this thing off with what we've been driving this week, and then we'll get to some news. So let's see. I'm just adjusting my mic stand here. So last week, we told you that Kyle had at last fulfilled a lifelong dream, and there now sits a Twizy, a Renault Twizy, in the permanent out-of-spec collection. So if you haven't checked out this thing yet, I suggest going to the out-of-spec reviews channel after the podcast and the Kyle Connor YouTube channels and clicking play, though I think we can probably pull up a bit of footage here. So you can see how they got it. Watching the videos, you can see how they got it off the truck, and there's lots of footage of a magical snowy night filled with twizzy slides and spins. So since you've got it unloaded and taken it on its first trips around the parking lot by Colton's detail shop, you depleted the battery somewhat, Kyle. But there's some question as to how you were going to charge it back up again, since I don't think you had the right receptacle and somehow the adapter didn't make it, or the adapter to make it work. So maybe start by telling us how you solved your charging predicament and what your near-term plans are for it mod-wise and adventure-wise. Because I know you have some adventures, right?
I love how we're starting the show with the Twizy, because...
Yeah. I mean, this is the most important car of the year, right, so far.
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad someone agrees. No, love my Twizy and just been having a blast. I've sort of been documenting the whole thing on my personal YouTube channel. I don't expect to really film much of it for reviews. It's not like we can provide consumer advice for the car no one can buy in America, but I'm just loving it. You know, we put snow tires on it yesterday. That'll be a video going up today. We got it charging with a string of adapters, no problem. And that there's a whole video on that as well. And I mean, it's just really a truly wonderful machine and enjoying every little bit of it. So much fun.
Right on. So you have some plans coming up this week. What kind of videos are we going to see? Because we got to see some just like slides in the parking lot and stuff. It looks like a blast. It's got a great stance actually for the thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it actually handles pretty well. It's a little understeery, but is good. Yeah, I don't really want to say what we have coming up, but we have some pretty cool things for next week's series. I think everyone's going to really like it. Should be pretty unique.
Okay. And probably like midweek, we'll see those?
Yeah, hard to say. Probably earlier than midweek, yes.
Okay. So I'm pretty excited about that because I watched every Twizy video you put up, and there's a bunch of them. So if you just see like one, there's more. You just have to dig around the maze of out-of-spec channels. There's a bunch
of
channels.
That's right. Yes. We'll eventually one day maybe compile them into one feed, but not anytime soon.
Okay. So just before Christmas, Kyle, you released a video showing how some Electrify America chargers were not working in the Colorado winter cold. So it got over a million views and probably put like charging networks on notice. But it wasn't just the chargers at that station. I guess you checked out others, and I believe you found that every like BTC cabinet was inoperable. So now you've revisited those chargers during another cold snap. And they're working, I believe. So what do you think was the problem? And how did you rate your charge that trip?
Right. So it was really kind of a disaster a few weeks ago. You know, me complaining about charging. What a surprise. But, you know, went a couple weeks ago to try out some chargers, found out that in very cold temperatures, starting at around 5 degrees Fahrenheit all the way down below that. We got down to minus 25, minus 27 degrees Fahrenheit. Got pretty chilly, and that's without wind chill. It really got cold here. And the Chargers stopped working at around 5 degrees Fahrenheit, best we can tell. And that seems a bit crazy,
right?
You know, that they wouldn't work. So, you know, made a video about it and certainly ruffled the industry up. I know that video has been referenced at NEVI funding conversations with different states, really made an impact in the charging world. One thing I thought was a little bit of a shame was we never heard from Electrify America or BTC on the issue. So, you know, we narrowed it down to a hardware manufacturer, just the BTC units, the new Electrify America stations. They built two different versions, SK Signet or BTC. The Signets didn't seem to have an issue.
Okay. And
of course, it's, you know, got EA's name right on the face of the charger.
Yep.
It's the most viewed video about charging in America, and we have not heard a peep from them. In fact, they actually just sort of stopped tweeting, stopped messaging anywhere, and sort of backed into a hole about the whole thing, which I thought was really not the way to communicate, not the way to build confidence with drivers, at least with me. I don't know about you guys. But, you know, I went again and I was like, look, we got another cold snap coming. It's not getting as cold as it did last time, but it's going to get colder than when they stopped working by a significant margin. And, you know, I went out again, night times and things like this. And, yep, it all worked and it was great. And so I don't know if either they fixed a problem or if the rapid temperature drop caused it, because again, remember those, how fast the temperatures were dropping during the last one. I'm thinking maybe there could have been moisture in the cabinets that froze to bus bars and connections. But then again, they need better moisture control in the cabinets. Like either way you spin it, that hardware failed when every other hardware was working fine.
Right.
So in my eyes, there's really no excuse there. We don't know what the exact problem was because we get no communication from these companies to tell us. What I can say, though, is it looks pretty good that we're working now. But the state of public charging is going downhill very fast. I've been saying it for years. You know, 2 years ago, I was saying we were in the golden age of owning an electric car. Right. Yeah, chargers weren't always reliable, but at least you could unplug, move, and do your thing. You know, you were usually the only one at a charging station. Now, it's you're battling for spots. If you get a slow charger, you're screwed because there's a line. You can't move after that. And it's really, I as I've been saying, I cannot recommend anyone to buy CCS vehicles if you plan to go on trips. It's just not viable right now. It's not possible to have an easy experience.
Right. I mean, like for instance, in our local, so I'm in Tallahassee, Florida. Our local installation, our only fast charging installation of any size was like four podiums, and we have like a. But other than that, we have maybe one or two locations downtown around government buildings, like way far off from the I-10. But anyway, so they were taken offline for weeks, like plural weeks. So people driving from, say, Jacksonville to anywhere west, have to stop in Tallahassee because there's just a big space, right, to charge. And there's nothing there for them. There's no, you know, temporary supply. What are people supposed to do? It's like mission critical stuff here. And, you know.
And what's crazy about that Tallahassee site is they pulled it offline, but they still kept it available in the app. You know, we have this app, this Twitter feed right now that we're turning into something cool called Rate Your Charge.
Right.
And with Rate Your Charge, we were seeing your site go offline in real time. We saw people show up there expecting to charge because the EA app says, hey, all four are available, and they're not able to charge. Then they pull up PlugShare. And surprisingly, on PlugShare, it shows, sorry, this site's down for maintenance.
Right.
So they're really doing a bad job of communicating when sites go down. We saw another example of this in Wytheville, Virginia, I believe, was it? And or maybe it was one, yeah, somewhere around that. I think it was Wytheville out of Sheetz. And the Sheetz went offline because they're renovating the store. It didn't have anything to do with the charging station. But basically, it's like a 12-month or eight-month restoration or something like that, that the charger's just going to be offline. So now it means you cannot road trip a CCS vehicle through West Virginia. It's such a critical corridor that they just pulled offline, didn't tell anyone. No temporary charging, by the way. You know, if a supercharger goes offline, not to pull the Tesla card, but they have the ability to grab this trailer that burned down, but they have other ones.
Like, I mean, it's sometimes you need to
And bring mobile charging in. You know, it's not hard to say, you know, hey, we provide energy to our customers that need to get places. If we then remove a charger, our customers now can't get places.
Right.
What can we do to fix that? That conversation doesn't happen over there from the viewpoint of the driver.
Right. Yeah. And so, like I said, this is like a mission critical thing, and people need to get places. So if the charging companies can't do it, I think that, charging companies hate it when I say this, but maybe the government needs to come in and give them money, do whatever it likes. But people now, like, electrification has happened enough, and it's going to happen more and more.
Who cares if they hate that we say they need regulation? Someone's got to regulate this stuff. That's why we started Rate Your Charge.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, because obviously with no regulation, they can just take chargers offline, leave big empty spots in the country, and, you know, actually, you know, they need to, they're trying to improve the service, but
they're not reporting correct uptime. That's what we keep finding over and over. Users rolling up to chargers that say they're available and they're not. And that doesn't happen on one specific network. That's across a bunch. All I can say is I cannot wait for Tesla to open up their supercharger network. It's going to change the game. Yeah, it's going to piss off the three Tesla owners that don't want Bolts charging there, but they got to get over it, because right now it's sort of it's critical that we have solid, reliable, ubiquitous charging.
I mean, it's at the point now where it's really, a service that people expect, that we need, you know, that, I mean, the government has to step in if private business companies aren't able to fill the gap properly, I think, either with regulation and with money, please, like, help. We need this infrastructure put in as fast as possible.
That's not going to happen. Because you have NEVI funding, which is going to take years to see the benefits of this. I mean, you're not going to see a NEVI funded charger for another 24 months or so.
Okay.
I mean, so we're stuck in a hole. The only short-term solution would be Tesla opening up the network.
Right. And the NEVI funding, the way they decided to roll it out, wasn't ever going to be like a great comprehensive sort of networking kind of thing anyway. It fills in some blanks and things. It's nice.
It just depends on how each state is planning to do it.
Right.
And each state is got different ideas, different plans. They all want different hardware. They want to use different power levels. They want to put them in different places. So it's going to be a very disjointed, not a holistic countrywide network.
Right. So, Tom, I'm sorry. I'm like taking up all the air time here. Yeah. Did you want to speak upon this a little bit?
No, I mean, you know, Kyle's hitting it all. You know, with the NEVI funding, I think it's important that there are very strict rules on, you know, if we're going to give you this money, on uptime, and it's got to be, you know, per station, not per site, you know, and, you know, it's the devil's always in the details. You can throw a ton of money at something and end up with a disaster. Or if and maybe by making waves like this, it is bringing this topic up, as Kyle mentioned, that, you know, it was mentioned at one of the meetings, you know, maybe this is the way it has to be done, where people have to just scream from the top of the mountain until people listen. And then they put in regulation that, hey, yeah, sure, we'll give you the money for the funding, but, you know, you've got to correct these problems. I'm sure the people that are in charge of making the rules and regulations aren't aware at the granular level as we are of the problems that are going on right now. So, you know, maybe this is a way of letting them know that, you know, this is, you know, it's if you just continue to fund what we have now, that's not going to be good. It's going to be a disaster. So, you know, it's a problem. It's a huge problem. And I don't have the answers, other than any public funds have to have a trigger that is overwritten by uptime. And that's the only way to force them to do it. Because right now, the companies like Electrify America are much more focused on getting a footprint out there and installing new sites than they are to make sure the sites work. I think it's just kind of like a rush for real estate to try to get all the best locations as much as they can, get these things in the ground, and then we'll worry about them working later. That's what it appears like, at least.
Right.
All of their energy and effort seems to be being put in expanding the network and not making sure the uptime is as best as it can be.
And I just want to clear something up. So we were talking about NEVI. So that stands for the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Formula Program. And that's part of the U.S. Department's of Transportation's Federal Highway Administration's to provide funding to states to strategically, yes, place, you know, charging through the different states. And there's a big pile of money for them to do that with. Yeah. All right.
So, yeah, basically, charging's just going to be the pain point for the next few years. Hopefully, we get it figured out. I think by Tesla opening up the network, it's really going to help alleviate a lot of this stress.
Right.
And that's going to be, to me, that's the only key, because then you have, sort of a non that's like a company that's doing it to actually make money. They have an incentive there because they've already built out their network. They're trying to sell utilization. And so there you go. That's going to lead to a better customer experience than either being punished to install chargers and honestly running the network from the driver's viewpoint, like they're punished to put in chargers, or it's going to be an EVgo situation where they're scrounging up every last dollar to, you know, get this government grant to put chargers here and this partnership to put them there. And it's not a very well thought out experience. Tesla says, let's put chargers everywhere and people will buy our cars. That's how they were able to front the cash.
Right.
And that worked.
That was the right way to do it. And it's a real shame that other OEMs haven't really, you know, really put the money investment into infrastructure.
It's too late at this point. I mean,
they should have done this a while ago. You know, I mean, they were working with utilities and looking at it and thinking about it, but not putting money into it and actually building something. Like
Kyle, quick question though. When you say, you know, when Tesla opens up the network, what do you think that's going to look like? Because I'm still not clear on what that's going to look like. We're not just going to snap our fingers one day and CCS vehicles are going to have access to the whole Tesla network. Are they going to be adding CCS cables? Because we see some of the drawings with like a CCS connector holster built into it. Are they going to sell an adapter? I mean, the adapter would be the magic pill. That would give you access to the whole network.
I think we know how they're going to do it. Now, which is a really cheap, smart idea, actually. No new cables is the idea, as far as my understanding. They're going to have a little, what they call the magic dock on the charger. So they're going to basically replace when you put the supercharger handle back in the plastic holster, that holster will double as a CCS connector. Ooh. And then, you know, I believe the adapters will be built into every supercharger is my understanding. And of course, they're only going to whatever the situation is, when they open up the network, it's probably just going to be a handful of stations.
That's
and
what I meant.
Like we've seen everywhere else over the next few months, my guess is they'll start to expand the program, but they probably want to do interoperability testing, make sure payment works on a very small scale, and then open it up there. So
do you think they'll retrofit old stations eventually?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the easiest. That's why this dock makes so much sense. Yeah. They can just remove the existing handle holster, put in a new one that also pretty much looks the same to any Tesla owner, but to a CCS owner could take the whole thing and plug that into their car is kind of what I'm understanding from this.
That's brilliant. That's actually really good.
And if nothing's confirmed, right? We don't know, but this is just what the rumors are flying around. And we've seen so many hints that we're just on the cusp of them opening it up. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised in the next, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, something like that, that we start to see this starting to happen.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I tell you, it's going to be crazy with the charge port locations though.
You know,
with how people are parking at superchargers and most vehicles are going to be blocking two stalls when they charge at a Tesla supercharger, based on how the plug, where the plugs are on most of the vehicles, you know, where they'll be on the wrong side. So they'll block that and the station next to it, you know, and I roll up at my big, Ford F-150 Lightning and, maybe take up three stalls.
Teslas are going to love me. Well, even in Europe, they even mentioned somewhere in the fine print, like these chargers can't support every car based off of charge port location. Like you got to don't be an idiot and block like four stalls, type situation. So
that's in the app, by the way. So when I charge on a Tesla, so in the app, when I open up the app as a non-Tesla owner, the first thing I see is charge your non-Tesla. That's not going to show. So I click on charge my non-Tesla and it gives me a map of where I can charge of all the local ones. But also somewhere on that page is, you know, click here to know how to do it. And as Kyle says, the first thing is please be considerate. Like, you know, the chargers are designed a certain way. Please don't. I think it says please don't park diagonally. There might even be an overhead sketch of a car parked, you know, in case someone doesn't know the word diagonal. Maybe they missed that lesson in school. But I think even it's really obvious to say, like, this is a bad positioning. This is a good positioning. You're not going to stop it. But I've not really seen it. Like, when it started over here in Europe, there was people were highlighting that online and highlighting the problems of where it happens and posting those pictures on. I don't see that anymore. So either people have stopped reporting it and they're just shrugging their shoulders and going, ah, you know, idiot. You know, idiots. You know, whatever drivers. I'm trying to think of a car with it on a different side. Hyundai Ioniq 5, maybe.
E-tron's a little bit hard to get to. Half.
Okay, so yeah, e-tron. Yeah, so I guess you could drive forwards in. It's got it on.
Yep.
Yeah, actually, the yeah. So
it, okay, that's not so gonna, maybe Taycan.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, exactly, right? So I saw that was being posted. Maybe people are just behaving better. Maybe people aren't using them. I don't see a lot of non-Tesla cars at Tesla superchargers, by the way, at least here. And it's a shame because it works really, really well. The speeds are very good. I think I had one case where, like, there was literally a guy that just would not stop staring. You know, you realize when someone's staring and you're like, is he okay? And I think, and he was just looking really annoyed. And I'm like, I was looking at him. I'm like, you're not breaking your gaze at me. Made me feel really uncomfortable. He didn't get out of his car, but he was just, you know, it's like human nature. Someone, if you're staring at someone and then, or like your mind is wandering, oh my God, you know, you look away, don't you? So that, you know, but he was the weirdo that wouldn't stop looking. That's my one experience of someone who's like, all right, dude, you can stop looking at me now. Yeah. But apart from that, everyone's been very friendly and welcoming, and it's making money for Tesla. There aren't too many vehicles around with unlimited supercharging baked in. Of course, you can buy them from Tesla, but they remove that. And if you buy a car privately that had, back in the day when Elon Musk said, hand on heart, charging will be free forever. You can believe me. Hey, have I lied to you before? No, Elon, you never have. Back in the day when he said charging would be free forever, if you bought one of those cars and you sold it privately, there's a few of those flying around, but I don't see a lot of Model S's camped at charging stations forever. So yeah. I don't mind charging. And I say this a lot as well. I don't mind paying a premium to Tesla. So if they want to charge me a little bit more, that's fine. Because on a road trip, I see it a bit like grabbing a bottle of water at a service station rather than opening my tap at home. I know I'm going to pay a premium, but I'm thirsty and I just want, I want to quench my thirst. And so I'll pay that for a bottle of water. I don't mind paying Tesla more money to use their superchargers because they're brilliant and they work and they're really fast and there's no problems. And they haven't opened up everyone. I think I put a comment on the screen that said they've opened up half, certainly less than 50% here. But they're probably monitoring the usage, the station usage right now, and to work out which ones they can and can't. And it's really smart.
Can't come soon enough. It's going to be freaking awesome. I'm excited. And we'll see how it rolls out. Either way, it'll be great stories. It'll be great for EV drivers. And the problem that I just keep running into, regardless of charge point operator, we just need alternatives. The problem is sometimes you get to a spot, like I just took a Rivian on a road trip last week. We were talking about it. You get to a spot and it's like, that's the only charger for the next 100 miles. So that particular one has to work and you're stuck there. You're literally held hostage to this one network. If we could just have a backup plan, an alternative, it would alleviate so many problems. For example, the fact that one station going down can block an entire heavily traveled corridor. These things should not be happening in 2023.
Right. Yeah. All right. I think we probably sidetracked on that enough for now. But
we could go for a few more hours.
And actually, that's a good point. There was a comment on last week's video, which was like, oh, guys, the first 25 minutes was all on charging. Well, look, we're at 24 minutes now. Sucker, we did it again.
Sorry.
But
and we're not even done on charging yet, really.
This is a really, really important issue.
It is really
important. I don't want someone turning up in the middle of the night, you know, a single mum with a child asleep in their baby seat in the back on their way home from a journey, and a charger can't work because some scumbag at a charging network can't be bothered to make their network work. You know, these absolutely must work. And I put a comment on screen a little while ago, like, don't, whatever it was, don't confuse malice for incompetence. I'd love to know what it is. I'd love to know whether these charging networks just don't care. Like,
I think they care.
Do you think so?
No.
I think
they would engage with the community. I think they would engage with people like us. I think they wouldn't go to ground because you can't, like, Kyle's not making this up for the sake of entertainment. Like, he's not making Top Gear, right? No. He's not making a scripted reality show that you watch right. And go, oh, that was quite funny. Genuinely doing these tests in automotive journalism, and they're getting all of this research for free. Look at Rate Your Charge. You know, he hasn't suddenly pulled together 5,000 followers of a Twitter that are all in on the same joke just to play a prank on a charging network.
Right.
These are real reports happening. This is deadly serious. So is it because they don't care? Is it because they're not very good at their jobs? I don't want to believe that. I want to believe that good people who drive electric cars are working at charging networks, not turning up in gas guzzlers. I want to believe these are good people there that are doing their best. But when they don't engage in the process and the conversation, none of us here are going to give you a hard time if your charger breaks. Like, right. if your charger goes pop, it's gonna happen. But the response is, we had a guy or a gal there in 24 hours and they had a part on the shelf and they fixed it. Like, that's the answer.
Right.
And if charger breaks, you go, I'm really sorry. There's an alternative down the road or whatever, or the site, as you know, if the site goes offline, hey, we're bringing a truck in, a mobile truck that is able, with full of batteries, that's able to do the stand in for 24 hours, anything, but not engaging in the conversation, pretending we don't exist, is the worst. That's the worst.
Yeah, it's really not good. And then, of course, we saw, you know, our friend Ryan from the Kilowatts get a response back from EA that was like, you know, threatening legal action instead of saying, oh, thanks for finding this issue.
Oh, he found a bug, yes.
Yeah, we're going to fix it. So it's just not the right messaging, from my opinion. They can message it however they want. We're reacting how we want. The other right. side of things are, you know, someone just commented, it's really important that you have to separate, you know, when evaluating a new car purchase, the cars are so good. The charging experience on the road is so bad. Of course, there's a few people out there, you know, maybe 5 or 10% that are like, I've never had an issue charging my car at Electrify America or at EVgo or at ChargePoint. Good. But guess what? That doesn't mean everyone else isn't having issues. And then, you know, the other side of it is the purchase and service experience of the car. I went to a Mercedes dealer this week to get service done. I made a video about it. It was the worst possible experience ever. And this is where people are buying $110,000, $150,000 Mercedes EQSs, and you just feel like you're just surrounded in the worst environment possible. And so I just can't – I walked away thinking – never before have I thought, wow, the Tesla service experience is amazing. And the purchase experience was perfect, you know, compared to whatever I just witnessed waiting in this lobby for the last 6 hours. People getting charged $150,000 over sticker, you know, dealer sales personnel being extremely rude to people buying expensive cars, incompetent service personnel. There was nothing good. And this is the premier Denver Mercedes dealership. This is where people buy their G-Wagons every day, and they're dealing with this. It was crazy. So honestly, the ones who get it are Lucid, Rivian, and Tesla. That's the purchase experience and the service experience everyone should strive for. No one's going to do it. Dealers suck in general.
Dealers are kind of difficult to deal with.
Yeah, you're seeing that. It, Dominic.
Oh, my God. I've just, so everyone knows, like, well, now, if you don't know, which most of our viewers know, I've been trying to buy a Chevy Bolt for some time, and it's a whole ongoing thing. And just yesterday I had, you know, two different dealerships, and, you know, one in just South Georgia and one in South Florida, going to have, you know, trying to get me a car, and should call me back in, you know, 15 minutes, one of them said, and a couple hours, the other one said. And they were actually, and a lady in Georgia was doing a great job, actually. She was trying to do a deal with another dealership to trade some of their trucks for some of their cars. And it looks like it didn't happen. But anyway, it's a whole another level of frustration if you can't even buy a car. Anyway, but Kyle's talking me out of buying a Bolt, but that's a different story. That's for later.
Well, let's hear the Bolt update. We're talking about what we're driving this week. What's the Bolt
update? Well, okay, real quick then. because I'm not even finished with you yet. But so I talked with, so I spent all this time looking for bolts yesterday, brand new ones. I the lady's going to call me back. I'm going to commit to like, it was like 32,000 something out the door, which is like out of my budget really. And it's like made me uncomfortable, but I'm just tired of looking, and I was just, I'll figure it out later, you know? But then Kyle calls me up later last evening when I'm preparing for the podcast, and we talked about, you know, the bolt things, and then used Model 3s again, which I had put the Model 3 thing on the shelf. I think, okay, I can't, because I have, you know, worries about driving a car with no warranty, because I'm just worried about like, repair costs and everything. But, you know, there's not so many things that can go wrong, mission critical kind of things that can go wrong on Tesla Model 3. And I can fix a lot of things myself. So,
yeah, it's like battery and motors on a long range are up to 120,000 miles. Right. You're looking in the 40, 50,000 mile range. That gives you a lot of time to figure out if there's a defect with the car.
Right.
And then, you know, in terms of actual operation of the vehicle, you're going to have upper control arms that need to be tightened. You're going to have maybe some switches fall off. There's really nothing major. PTC heater failing would be the most expensive, I think, user item that you would be, you know, have to be on the shelf for. And that's like maybe $1,000 or $1,200, something like that. So I can't imagine a repair, at least in, I've owned five Teslas now and we've put a ton of miles on them. They don't really break that often.
Right, right. And yeah, you can drive pretty hard too.
You can, we've tried to destroy this Model 3 and it won't break.
Right. Right. Okay. So basically I'm not going to look. So basically what we decided last night, I'm going to look for a good Model 3 deal or get a used Bolt or other EV for like a year or whatever. And just so I don't have to worry about this for now. I need a car. I'm driving my old pickup truck and it's not good, which is great for going to the, you know, fishing trips every, you know, once in a while, but not for daily driving. It's like a tractor. I love it, but it's not really what, you know, great. Anyway, so Kyle, you also this week took advantage of two of your friends who own the exact same spec of Volkswagen ID.4, and you made a couple interesting comparison videos. In the first, you charged both cars after driving one normally to the charge station, and then you used the yo-yo technique on the other one. So first, tell us what the yo-yo technique is, and then what kind of difference it made, if any.
Sure. Well, a lot of cars don't have on-route battery preconditioning still.
Right.
And, you know, what that means is in the cold weather here in really most of the northern United States and Europe, of course, you know, batteries sit outside frozen, which means they don't want to charge. So if you have battery preconditioning, you select the fast charger that you're going to in most cars, and it will run a battery heater. You'll burn a little bit more energy to get to the charger with a warmer battery pack, which then can charge faster is the idea. Pretty simple. ID.4 does not have this function. It has some like norm. It tries to keep the battery temperature around, I think, 55 degrees. Originally, we were told by Volkswagen 70 something degrees. And maybe that was the case for the first software version. But as far as I'm seeing on the newer cars, at least, it doesn't really do anything as far as I understand it. So, you know, in order to heat up the battery pack, you have to create a lot of waste heat. And that is basically by flooring it and going full regen and driving the piss out of the car. And right. So we had both cars parked at the same state of charge overnight. We had both a 30-minute window to get to the charger. Alyssa drove normally. I drove the nuts off of one car. And basically, you know, it was a difference. It was a charging race to 60% because obviously, I was going to burn more energy, which means I would need to put in more kilowatt hours to get to 60%. But if my battery was warmer, then I could get there quicker. And it's a pretty simple concept for our viewership to know, but I thought this would be an interesting one. Basically, it took 19 minutes in the car that I yo-yoed to get up to 60%. It took 59 minutes, an hour, in the other one.
Wow. So that's significant. That is a big difference.
Huge difference. And just a shame, really, that Volkswagen doesn't include battery preconditioning. Now, I'd like to do this with Tesla as well because they're a little bit more communicative. We could get all the data. So two of my friends actually just bought identical Model 3 performances. So we might be doing a similar thing again on a cold snap.
Oh, brand new Model 3 performance. Lucky friends.
Yep. It's a good deal. It's $10. If you, they both got white on white. It was $10 under the tax credit cap. And yep, I mean, it's just, you can't buy a better car, or I should say a more performancey car for under 50 grand by the time you factor everything in.
Yeah.
We get 10,000 off in Colorado because you get 7,500 plus our state.
Are you, so what's the state rebate?
It's $2,000. So it's 9,500 off.
Nice.
And we get that $4,000 so nice. Here.
Yeah. Nice. And no tax. And
Florida no is such tax. A, oh, no yeah. tax, no sales
no
tax?
No sales tax on electric vehicles. That's always been the case here.
Yeah, man, so, Florida I mean, is so I mean, behind. Dom, oh my God,
Dom, if I could get a Bolt at MSRP, we're talking out the door like $18,000.
Man,
well, when you consider all the tax,
yeah.
If you qualify for the 7,500, 18,000 for a new car. So
that's amazing.
It's crazy.
Yeah. All right. So you also did another video with these two ID4s, Kyle, which also interesting result and not really what I expected. So you have the two identical cars again. One, though, is actually Colton's, who does the Auto Spec Detailing channel. And he lowered his a bit. He put lowering springs on it to give it a better look. I guess a worse ride from what I understand. But it looks
good. Better for handling.
Yeah, but it looks good. You drove them for. Yeah, you tell me about the test, what you did.
We just drove them basically in the same route at the same time, one lowered, one at stock height. And we found very, very no difference between the two, which is kind of as expected. You know, looking back on this test, I actually wish, you know, we referenced the cars in miles per kilowatt hour, but you can actually do kilowatt hour per 100 kilometers, which is funny that you can do that on US spec cars. And that would have given us a more granular outcome. And okay. I wish we had done that, but didn't think about it until after the fact. Basically, don't watch the video. It's so not worth it because it's just.
It's all right.
There's no difference. The cars, we didn't notice any gain in efficiency by lowering the car.
Right. Which is kind of an unexpected result for me. So even though it wasn't, kind of result you expected, it wasn't like an aha thing, you know, it was a different kind of aha thing for me because it's like, what? I was, you know, sure. Cause you drove far, you know, you drove up into Wyoming somewhere, right? And come back.
Yeah. Yeah. We did the same thing, set up both cars identical. They came back with the identical consumption numbers.
Right. Yeah. So that's kind of amazing. I kind of like to see that on, and you were saying actually on your Rivian, which you can raise and lower, that you don't really see a difference in consumption when you raise and lower as well, right?
Very little when I lower the suspension on my Rivian. Very rarely do I ever drop it. Same with our e-tron because it rides so nice in comfort mode. So you'll always just see me. I see all these Rivians just sitting on the ground on the highway. You know, everyone here in Colorado has a Rivian now. It's sort of like if you live in Colorado, you have to drive a Rivian. So it's pretty awesome, actually. But I see them all slammed on the highway and I'm like, you're having the worst ride. Raise that sucker up and enjoy the nice suspension.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's move along here. Tom, Tom, so we told the audience last week that you were going to put together a video and a post about why you believe free charging should be banned. And you have, of course, lived up to your word. So some automakers are giving buyers free charging sessions when they buy their cars. So why is this a terrible idea?
Yeah, so let's continue to beat the charging drum and really get that guy who posted that comment last week angry.
That's great photos.
As Kyle has mentioned, and Kyle was, as he mentioned earlier, a couple of years ago, he was saying this is the golden era of EV charging, because basically what he meant by that, public charging was very easy. Now, there weren't a lot of charging stations, but if you found one, there was nobody else there. You know, there might be one other person. And you know, other people have noticed this too, but Kyle and I are out a lot at charging stations. And I think and there's a lot of other people, it's not just the two of us, but we visit charging stations a lot. So we really have seen the evolution of stations being empty to seeing somebody else there and being like, hey, this is great. Someone's here. I can talk to someone while I'm charging to where it's at the point now where this many stations, and this is regional. I want to say, first of all, because I had a lot of people comment and say, Tom, you know, where I live, I don't see this problem. And it's the tip of the iceberg right now, because the EV adoption in certain areas is much more intense. And yeah, even though there's more chargers in those areas, the stations are getting completely filled. And it's to the point now where in my area here, if I open up my Electrify America app and look at the local four or five charging stations, almost always two or three of them say full. And so I've been driving to these stations over the last couple of months and talking to the people there, just parking, sometimes not even to charge, and just taking pictures of, like, you know, ID4, 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 Ionic 5, Ionic 5, and observing and saying, hey, you know, I'm a journalist. I'm doing an article on charging. Where do you live, if you don't mind me asking? I don't want your street address, but do you live close to here? Are you on a road trip? And better than 60% of the respondents lived within a few miles of the charging station and were only there because they had free charging. Many of these people could charge at home. Now, some of the people had home charging installed even, but some of the people said, I got this, it's a 3-year lease. I'm not going to go through the expense of putting in an outlet or something at my home because I got it because it's 3-year free charging. So what's happening is, as we talked about earlier, we have a lot of problems with the DC fast charge infrastructure in this country. There's not enough chargers. They're broken. They're down. There's tons of issues that we have. And these manufacturers, as an incentive to sell for you to buy their vehicle, offer free charging programs. Some of them are unlimited free charging for 3 years. Some of them go all the way down to just 2 complimentary charging sessions, which in itself is not a problem. But what we're noticing now is the people that have these free unlimited charging sessions plans, and I don't blame them, are just using public DC fast chargers as their weekly charging or daily charging, whatever they use, and it's completely backing up all of the stations. And you know, for people that are on road trips, and I've talked to people that are like sitting there waiting in the queue, and they're like, "Yeah, I'm driving up from North Carolina, I'm going to Maine, and you know, it sucks. Like half the times, I got to sit here and wait because there's 2 ID4s. It's a 4 station site. One's broken." You know, and the other 3 have ID4s and Ionic 5s, these vehicles that have free charging. So I figured we had to at least begin to have this discussion and call out the automakers. I don't blame the networks as much. Of course, they're complicit to this, but hey, this is great revenue for them. So I don't blame them for wanting these programs because they're going to make a lot more money per car when a manufacturer signs a program like this and offers it than they would ever make from that car from the customer using the station, because they would use it less. They'd only use the stations when they needed to. So this is a cash windfall for the networks. I can't blame companies for wanting more revenue, but for the manufacturers, I think they're still afraid that people aren't going to buy their EVs. And that could have been the case years ago where the EVs that were out there weren't really that great. They had very short right. range. People were worried about, well, where am I going to charge? This just removed that pain point. Don't worry about charging at home. Don't worry. Free charging for the whole term of this lease. There's this network. They're all over the place. They tell them you could charge. There's one here, 6 miles from your house, whatever. And so that it is a good way to put people in EVs. But the unintended consequences are now it's creating a horrible ownership experience for everybody, because even the people with the free charging programs are not happy because they have to sit there and wait. But when you're on a road trip and you have to wait 40 minutes before you can even plug in, it's a terrible ownership experience. And I talk about this one BMW i4 owner. It was a new owner. She had just gotten her car and she was like in tears because she had to pick up her son and she didn't have enough energy to get her son. The battery went down a little bit faster than she expected because it was cooler out and she was in a panic and she couldn't plug in. And she was just like, that's it. This is going back to the dealership tomorrow. She only had it for a couple of weeks. She's like, I'm living constant under stress. Now she lived in, it was either a condo or an apartment complex where she couldn't charge at home. So the dealer told her, don't worry about that. You just go to Electrify America sites, you know, once a week or whatever, how many miles do you drive a week? And just fill up there and it's free. You know, for 2 years, you could drive for free. So, you know, this is a conversation we have to continue to have it as well as Kyle's conversation about broken chargers. But what this is doing is just throwing gasoline on an already festering problem. You know, it's just, it's, and it's, here's the best part. It's an unforced error. Like the charging stations are going to be broken. I think this is going to be a problem for a while. We're not just going to snap our fingers and they're going to be reliable. I think for a while, we're going to have a lot of problems with broken charging stations, not enough plugs, all this stuff. As we have these growing pains on infrastructure, even with the NEVI funds, when they come out, we're going to have problems with that. But this compounds the problem exponentially if you're going to have so much unnecessary utilization. And there's other reasons too. To me, if you can charge at home, you should charge at home. It's a better experience. Charging at home is so easy. It makes the EV life so nice. You just come home, you plug it in. You don't have to think about charging. This is what we're doing with this free charging program is we're keeping people tethered to the gasoline model, where once a week, right, your vehicle's low, you drive somewhere, you wait. Now, you wait longer with an EV, but it's the same with gas. You sit there, you wait till you're full, and then you leave. We need to evolve from that and you know, charge your EVs like we charge our cell phones. Whenever there's a plug, you plug in for a little while. You always plug in at home, right? But if there's an outlet at work, you probably plug in at work and put your cell phone on the desk and charge for a little while where you're at work. If there's a level one or level two charging source at work, you're going to plug in while your vehicle is charging. Eventually down the road, I think employers that have big parking lots, they're all going to have out. Even if it's level one, even if it's a simple level one plugs across the parking lot, they're going to have that. So we need to break this model of, you know, every week we go somewhere. And then there's the free problem where people are being conditioned to believe EV charging is free. And after 3 years of having free EV charging, let's say, they're not going to want to pay. And I mentioned this on the podcast last week. I have my followers reaching out to me saying, "Hey, Tom, I live in New Jersey. Where you live, can you please, do you have like a map of where the free chargers are? Because I'd like to see if I could go, you know, the first year of my car without paying." And I'm totally against that. Now, I know if you get free charge every now and then, that's great. But we can't equate our EV energy with free. It's not. Everything right. costs money. There's a price for everything. And the price for your free unlimited charging was baked into the cost of your car. Tesla mm-hmm. used to bake in that price into their cars when they right. first were offering unlimited free charging. There's got to be a better way for manufacturers to incentivize the sale of electric vehicles. I think they should be incentivizing home charging whenever possible because it makes a better ownership experience. Chevy does a good job with giving you the option, either a $500 credit, and I'm okay with a $500 credit because it's a cap. And when you have a limit, you know in your head, like, I can't just abuse this. And they'll use it sparingly. They'll use it when they need it. But these free unlimited plans are the real, real problem. If you wanted to say, look, we'll give you 5,000 free miles of charging or, you know, 500 kilowatt hours, I'm okay with that. I still don't love it. I think there's better ways of incentivizing it. But Chevy gives you the option of either $500 of EVgo charging credit, or they'll pay for like the first $1,250 of an installation of a home charger. I'd much rather see people being incentivized to install home charging because it's a better charging experience. They'll have a better ownership experience, and it's going to keep people from unnecessarily putting an extra strain on our public infrastructure. And, right. It was a controversial topic. I had a lot of people comment that they think that's wrong. They only got their EV because it was 3 years of free charging. They wouldn't have got it either way if that wasn't
the case. They shouldn't have gotten it.
Right. But I agree. It's a great sales incentive. You can't, there's no way you can argue that point, but the unintended consequences is what, and life is a series of dealing with unintended consequences, not just EVs. Your entire life is you just dealing with, you know, the unintended consequences of your actions. But in sure. any event, to me, that's the biggest problem. It's going to eventually hurt electric vehicle sales when people have very poor ownership experience, when people can't take a road trip because they pull up and there's six cars waiting to plug into the four chargers and one's broken. And 90% of those people live within 10 miles. You're 500 miles from home, but you're queued up behind a line of, you know, ID4s, which is the worst offenders. The Ioniq 5s are pretty bad. They're out there all the time. The EV, no, not EV6. But even Taycans, I can't believe I see Porsche Taycan owners, some owners at the same station every week getting their free $12 worth of electricity. I can't believe that, you know, if you spend $150,000 on a car, that you value $12 more than 45 or 50 minutes of your time. That is just crazy to me. But it is, there's something about free that we're just, we're hardwired to want, like when it's free, it's for me. So that's my rant, guys.
Mom, you're 100% correct. And you know, the thing is, automakers don't care about any of this. Automakers don't run this network. Yeah, sure. Certainly in this case, EA is owned by Volkswagen Group. But you know, from Volkswagen's perspective, when they sold ID4s, these are not problems they ever have to deal with. All they're thinking is, how do we sell cars and how much can we pay for an incentive to push metal? And guess what? It worked. There's a lot of people. And we always said, actually, back in the day, like, wow, imagine buying an ID4 in New Jersey. It was the best value and you get 3 years of charging. Even we didn't realize how big of a problem this was going to be. And of course, unintended. Now it's just absolutely insane. So I actually really like this idea, which we haven't seen implemented in the US, but it happens in Europe a lot, which is a discounted rate on a preferred charging network. You know, for example, if you buy a Volkswagen, you get your Ionity charging credit over there at a cheaper rate than your rack rate. Here, I don't think we've seen anyone do that. We've just seen free or a certain amount of free and then back to full price. I'd love to see something in the middle.
And Kyle, another point that people made with this is, I talked about free unlimited, and a lot of people said, yeah, but it's just 30 minutes unlimited and then you've got to wait. The problem is, I see that not being the case. Right. I see people being able to charge longer than 30 minutes. And then I've had some people tell me, oh no, I start getting charged after 30 minutes, but if I unplug, I can plug right back in, it starts another session. So like, okay, if you're gonna do like, and I'm still totally against it, but if you're gonna do these free charging set things, it's gotta be 30 minutes. You have to immediately start getting charged. And there has to be, I think, a 24 hour period. Right now it's 1 hour, but in any event, I don't believe we should have these free unlimited plans at all. We don't need them. It's unnecessary. Tesla learned a long time ago. They tried it. They did it. They needed to kind of jumpstart, you know, get people excited about it. Yeah. That Model S's all came with free for lifetime unlimited charging. And then all of a sudden, you remember there was a blog post where they said, hey, guys, you know, these chargers really aren't meant to be your daily chargers. We're seeing people use them right by their houses. These are meant for long distance driving. They were hinting at it. And then all of a sudden, okay, they're not listening. That's it. It's done. You know, no more free unlimited charging. So it's just, it's bad for the industry. People, these manufacturers are looking at this quarter sales. They're not looking beyond that and how it's going to hurt their eventual sales. So maybe they don't care. Maybe they say, well, if people are so aggravated about public charging, they'll just buy our gas car. So either way, we win. I don't know. I don't know if that's the attitude, but it's wreaking havoc. And guys, it's going to get so much worse. As Kyle talked about, you know, charging is going to get worse. This is pouring gasoline on a fire. And if we keep doing this, if we keep seeing these unlimited free charging plans, forget about road trips, or at least plan three times as long as it should take on a road trip.
Right. Or just, you know, everyone's going to buy Teslas until, you know, they open up the network and make it just more feasible for everybody to move around. It's like just to jump back to that situation before, like the local station here, it showed like live and it was working and it was not working. But if they had had, you know, the Tesla network was open, so Tesla has a chargers right there. They just opened up 20 miles down the road east of me, a new charger with a new charger stationed. So another supercharger. And then to the south of me, between here and the coast, they just put in another set of superchargers, like at a gas station. It was like, wow. So, you know, they've covered this area like really well right now. Like, and but there's no you're right, and there's no CCS equivalent. It's like, it's not good enough. Anyway, I've gone on enough. Gone on long enough.
One last point I want to bring up. Another problem with it is it's incentivizing people to stay at the chargers longer. When you're on a road trip, we typically charge to 70 or 80%. Kyle charges to even lower because that's even it's even more if you're really savvy about it, you can make it to the next charging station. You figure out when your EV, because every EV is different, when the it really starts to peak down, and then you just unplug at that point and you get the most bang for your buck. But most people on a road trip are going to hang till about 80%, because that's when for most EVs it really slows up. But a lot of these people, yeah, that's one time when I pulled up that picture for those that are watching on YouTube. When I'm charging all the way on the right, you see me charging my Rivian R1T, but you've got a Hyundai Ioniq 5, which is free unlimited for 2 years, three ID4s, free unlimited for 3 years, Mercedes EQS SUV, free unlimited for 2 years, a Polestar 2, free unlimited for 2 years, then an Ioniq 5 and a Mustang Mach-E. They only have 250 kilowatt. They're probably paying unless it was brand new, unless the vehicles are brand new. But, you know, just the point of look at how many of the vehicles there are charging and not paying. And I just wonder how many of those people, I don't remember when I took this. I know I talked to the people. I don't remember exactly how many people were told me they could charge at home, but it was at least a handful of them. But what I was talking about was time-wise. Because these people want to go, say, once a week to refill their car, they don't want to have to keep going back. They're viewing it as like the gas model. They stay till it's 100%. And a lot of these cars take longer to charge from 80% to 100% than they did from the point when they plugged in to 80%, like to 15 or 20% to 80%. So they're there forever. And then there's no idle fees. Electrify America's idle fees that are supposed to be in effect don't work. So the people will plug in, go inside Walmart or Target. This happened to be this is a Walmart station where that picture was there. And I mean, they'll shop for a couple of hours and come out later and, you know, they've been, the vehicle's been plugged in for 2 hours, it's just hogging up a space, you know. And the best part is it'll be like a 350 kilowatt. It'll be an ID4 hogging up the only working 350 kilowatt station for 2 hours. And it's just, you know, we've got a lot of problems with charging. These free unlimited charging programs are amplifying the problems. And, I know manufacturers watch the Inside EVs podcast. They all tell me they do. You have to start considering that these are hurting you and hurting the industry, or they will hurt you eventually. They might be helping sales this quarter, but it's going to come back to bite you. And you need to move on from free unlimited charging. There's ways you can incentivize your vehicles that won't hurt the industry and make a poor ownership experience for EV owners.
And this is probably the difference between so many of those car makers and Tesla, who own the charging network themselves. I'll draw a parallel to between when I've worked for public companies, and every 3 months you've got there's an earnings call, and I've had marketing budgets pulled at the last minute. I've had just all sorts of just shenanigans because you're a public company and everyone's watching you like a hawk every 3 months. And I've worked for private companies. I've worked for billionaires. I've worked for, big family companies that have been in business 200 years. And working for a private company, like their only focus is let's be the best company we can be. And if that's a short term, hit for a long term gain, and they think long term. And so lots of people in the comments have been saying it's about selling. I think, we've said it's about selling cars. If you are incentivized, if you work at a car maker and you are incentivized to hit your monthly or quarterly or yearly target, and you get money in your paycheck that's going to pay for your new kitchen or new holiday, if you sell more cars, you will sell more cars by however means you want to. And it's the difference between short-term and long-term thinking. I think all of us, I think lots of people watching and people like us who love electric vehicles and, we want to see a vibrant community that works for everybody as well. I think we can think a little more long-term. I've got no skin in any game short term. I want to see EVs here in 20 years time that charge in 2 minutes and there's charge in every corner. But it's that we're playing the long game, and so many people are playing the short game or the monthly target or the quarterly target, and this hits them. And I totally understand why they do it, but it sucks. But Tom, I don't think it's going to stop. I wish it would.
It probably isn't going to, but we can continue to beat the drums. Maybe people. Well, listen, I've talked to people in every major company, and most of them have privately, at least the marketing people, like when we sit down at dinners and so forth, have said, I agree, I think it's going to come back to bite us. I know, the sales is pushing for it because it puts people in the cars, but it's going to eventually be bad for the industry. So there are people within every company that realize it, but sales is key, you know, and that's sales is king, I meant to say. And, you know, if the bean counters think it's going to put more vehicles, you know, move more vehicles out of their showroom, they're going to continue to do it. The crazy thing is right now we have such a shortage of EVs and such high demand. They shouldn't be, they don't need any kind of incentive and people will buy them. You know I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
Larry, on screen right now, Larry in the comments says that even when Tesla superchargers are busy, they'll stop you at 80. And again, because they control everything and you can unplug and plug in again. It's not going to charge anywhere. It's, no, your car's not charging because they can explain politely and respectfully, we need to share this resource. The next person's waiting and the supercharger's full and hopefully people understand and we all look out for each other. And hopefully you're not losing your mind because your Tesla stopped charging 80%.
Well, you could always just bump it to 100.
Well, yeah, and you can slide it up, right? I'm sure we've all done that. I did that recently. Had my car set too low. I'm like, I'll save the battery. And then I went to do a road trip in the morning and I'm like, didn't charge last night, did it? So yeah, you can always change. You can always fiddle with the settings. But
yeah, I went to a supercharger in my Model S a few weeks ago where I was the only car. And then I plugged in. It's a high usage supercharger
system. Oh, that
sucks.
There's
20 other spots here. No, so I just sucks. Went up to 100, got lunch. Nah,
you're not doing that. Yeah. Oh, man.
Right. Okay, we should move on to let's talk about some news of the week. So the big product news of the week is the Genesis X convertible concept has gotten the green light to go into production. So let all the convertible lovers out there rejoice. So the news came from Luke Donkerwolk, the brand's chief creative officer. So it's legit. Now, the images we have are of the concept, but the actual production version, I think, should look pretty close to this. If you're hoping for something affordable, though, this will not be the Miata of EV convertibles, cheap and cheerful. Nope. Like the Polestar 6 convertible, which will start selling at around $200,000, this will also be a true flagship. I'm using air quotes there, flagship. No price point was given, but Peter Lanzavecchia, the chairman of the Genesis National Dealer Advisory Council and owner of Genesis of Cherry Hill in Marlton, New Jersey, said he expects to see a lot of Bentley convertibles traded in. So that's kind of an interesting statement. So that's some serious upscale ambition. So Kyle, do you think Genesis can live in the same rarefied atmosphere as Bentley? Has it built up like that kind of brand cachet? Its first standalone model went on sale like 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, it's always been like a Bentley ordered on wish.com, the brand, a little bit, but you know, a bit, but you know, it's so funny because I'm such a Genesis fan. Truly. I've driven the G90, their new luxury sedan. It's not electric, but like it's got all the stuff that, and even sometimes more stuff than like an S-Class would have. Like they're really getting there. But the one thing Genesis is still lacking is like, you know, roll up to the dinner spot and it's like, you don't go to the valet and say, can you park the Genesis up front? You would say, can you park the Rolls up front? You know what I mean? It's not one of those. It's a little bit like, you just couldn't afford a BMW, so you bought a Genesis. And honestly, they shouldn't have that image. I have that image sometimes. I'm like, oh, wow, you bought a Genesis. Wouldn't it have been nice if you were driving an S-Class? But, you know, that's not the right way to look at it. It is a wonderful product. They really have a ton of stuff in there. But I don't think it just is lacking the image because it's less expensive.
Right. It's like value luxury is kind of what they were looking for, right?
Yeah. Originally. And people want to be seen in luxury. A lot of people, some people love their Genesis. I mean, you go to South Florida, every other person's driving a Genesis right now because they want to look like they're driving a luxurious car, but didn't want to, you know, write the check for it. So I think they have the best design language for sure. I love the way they look. I like the way they feel. They're always a step down from the true luxury brands, in my opinion, in terms of suspension calibration, driving dynamics, things like that. But for a lot of people who aren't as maybe fine-tuned of how a car is performing, you really do get a lot of vehicle for a pretty good price, really good price, and they're very high quality. So I'm sure this will do really well if they make it.
Right. It looks beautiful, man. I just love, I mean, I could never afford one, I'm sure, but man, it's just, I would just love to see one like rolling down the street, you know? Yeah. Yeah, it looks at all the angles, man. Those wheels look, those like throwback, look like wire spoke kind of.
It's got like a rotiform type vibe to it. Really cool looking wheel. I mean, Genesis design is really just killing it. And then they made the GV60, which is just an ugly jelly bean.
Yeah, I mean, with the interior of the GV60 is nice, I think. But
right. Well, my mom thinks it looks like a Porsche Macan. But mom, if you're watching, it really doesn't. I'm sorry.
Your mom still has her GV60?
Yeah, she loves it.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I love the crystal ball gear shifter thing in the middle. Yeah, I actually haven't seen that in person yet. I really need to just run down to the dealership just so I can check that out.
Right. It is a bit plasticky.
Is it?
Yeah.
It okay. Right. It's like so
that's
close.
The Genesis thing looks really nice.
Right.
But then you start touching stuff and you're like, oh, okay, that would have been metal in a Mercedes.
That's kind of what I found with
it. Got a shape cost somewhere, Kyle.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I found with the Cadillac Lyric. You know, I thought it would look really nice, but then you start touching things. I think it really should be a little bit better. If you're trying to be a luxury brand, you need luxury feel on stuff. You know, it can't feel wiggly or plastic.
To a lot of people, though, it is luxury feel because they might be coming out of something else. I don't think very many Genesis buyers are coming down from, you know, I'm sure they are, but not as a percentage. I think there's a lot that are coming from Infiniti or Lexus, which are these, you know, definitely not luxury brands trying to be perceived as luxury going into Genesis, you know, and that's certainly a step up for those cars.
Right. All right. So let's move along to the next thing. So we talked a lot about concepts on the podcast and how we don't like them and how some of them aren't even real. They're just pixels in the ether. But we won't spend a lot of time on this, but Nissan has taken one of these digital concepts and turned it into an actual physical thing. I feel like it's pretty safe to say it's unlikely Nissan will build something based on this concept. But Tom, could I be wrong?
You could be, and you could be right.
That's a song right there. That's Public Image Limited has a song called it like that. But anyway.
Yeah, this is like, I much prefer talking about the Genesis convertible because it's like ready to go. I think that if they do take it to production, it's probably going to look pretty close to what we see. And it's really exciting. You know, and this is cool also, but
it's not,
you know, I don't think it's something we need to really go deep in onto here. Right. Let's see Nissan, you know, bring us something that looks a little bit, maybe less maxed out that we can get excited about them. I tend to be more on Kyle's team with regards to not spending a lot of time on these wild concepts. It's cool. And I like the fact that you can get an idea of maybe where the brand's going, which is important. I'm not saying don't make them. I think that, you know, they serve a purpose within the companies, but to spend a lot of time on trying to figure out what this is going to end up being with the company is probably not something that we're going to even get close to.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot we can say about this. I like the proportion. If we can, I don't know if you have can do this, Martin, but if you can get it like a side the profile view of that, just the proportions of the like the front to the wheel, I just like the way it looks like that. I was kind of, I kind of blew it off when I first saw it. It was like kind of too blingy lights and, you know, just kind of tricks. No solid design really. But then looking at like, this is not so bad angle. You can kind of get a feel for the proportions. It's kind of an interesting look, actually, and it'd be interesting to see in a production vehicle. But as you say, we'll move along.
That side view there reminds me a little of, I know it was smaller, but what was the name of that mini concept?
That was
out like 10 years ago, whatever. It was so
the
cool.
Old Roadster concept that never was made.
That the something man. I can't remember the name of it, but that was so cool.
That
view car. There reminds me of it a little bit.
Right. So we talk Tom, you wrote this next piece up. So Ford, you wrote, has slashed prices and increased production of the Mustang Mach-E. So what kind of, I didn't have a chance to dive into this one, but what kind of price cuts are we talking here? And is this in reaction to the Tesla price cuts or maybe the Inflation Reduction Act incentives?
So I think, you know, obviously, and I was on a call with Ford about this. Their response was, no, this has nothing to do with Tesla. You know, okay. we have different customers, we have different sure. products, but you know, you can't help but look at the timing of it and realize that the Mach-E's, one of the Mach-E's direct competitors would be Model Y, and you know, it just mm-hmm. underwent an insane price reduction when you factor in the federal tax credit and everything's $20,000, right? That the Model Y all of a sudden overnight cost less. So, you know, Ford slash prices now, depending on the model, not as much as that. It was as much as I think $6,000. I don't have the price in front of me here. And they also sliced or cut the price of the extended range battery by, I think, $1,500. I think it was now it's $7,000. I think it was $8,500 before, or $8,600 to $7,000. I see it there. So, you know, I still not a lot of Mach-E's will qualify for the federal tax credit, even with this.
There's some, sorry to interrupt, Tom. There's some news on that, actually, that someone has said earlier. So this could affect all of that.
Okay,
so,
I hadn't seen that. Well, that's Nebulous. The prices now.
Nebula 1701 had said in the chat, and a few people others were talking about different cars and how they're affected. But so big news, GM won their appeal to the IRS, and they will now use the EPA CAFE standards for determining what vehicle is and isn't an SUV. So that was this. So they were applying the incentive to SUVs kind of randomly. It's like one car is an SUV and the performance version of it isn't. And it's anyway, so that's all changing now, it looks like. So
if that's true, then all the Mach-E's will qualify, right? Because yes. then it'll yes. the limit will be 80,000.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah.
So that would be good news for Ford on this.
Yes.
Now watch Ford reverses price increase, decrease. You know,
Tesla's yeah. going back up after this.
Right. Ooh.
Get your order in right now if you want one.
I hope that doesn't make the used Teslas go up as well.
They will. I told you that yesterday was the day to buy.
I guess I'll better jump on that right after the show.
You've got to jump on something for crying out loud. I know. At this point, I'll be happy if I buy another Spark. Just got to get something. Yeah, that's big news there. I hadn't seen that yet. That must have...
just after we went on the air, this happened.
That was 20. That Reuters report 25 minutes ago.
Yeah,
right.
That was published. Yeah.
And Ford ago. Also talked about increasing production on Mach-E, but they had already either said or hinted to that like a month or so ago. But I think this was like their the official press release of it. You know, sometimes manufacturers say something, but it's not the. And then like a month later, they announce it officially. You know, and that's kind of. What the case was with this. We knew they were going to make more Mach-E's, but it's a dramatic increase. They're currently making, I think, 78,000, and they're going to bump it up to 130,000. So it's a 67% increase annually. So, you know, that's a huge, you know, two-thirds more than they were previously making. So they
must have good demand.
Have confidence that they're going to sell them if they increase production that much. That's a huge production increase.
Right. Larry says, Dom should get banned from inside EVs until he gets an EV. Come on. Good point. It's true. And for a long time, you know, I was working, like writing about EVs, and I could not afford to buy an EV. It was like so frustrating. Oh my God. So I was, you know, very happy to have like the Spark EV when I did it for a few years. It was kind of, and yeah, I really need to get back in as soon as possible.
But yeah, pricing is going to go up. There's no way around it. Now Model 3 may not, because that still will have the $55,000 cap.
Okay.
But Model Y, either way, I think, like we are talking, Dom, we've seen a dip, and I don't think there's any proof to show that dip's going to continue.
Right. Yeah. So Peter Ritter has the best suggestion. Dom should buy a Twizy.
Well, you wouldn't be able to really go anywhere in it.
I have to get the double battery option thing that you were talking about on one of your videos. You said there's like a bigger battery. Somebody's got aftermarket.
Yes. Yeah, some dude is basically taking iPACE modules, hacking them up and fitting them into a Twizy. And I'm like, that's what I want. So we got to figure out a way to ship a big ass battery over from Norway here.
Right. Yeah. Or maybe
you got to figure out a way of making it street legal. You're working on that.
I mean, I want to know the details. Yeah. I've just been driving it. I don't know if it's not legal. That's for sure.
Okay.
Imagine getting pulled over in the Twizy. How funny that would be. And then imagine them saying, "Oh, sorry, you can't have this car in the U.S." And then I can make a video titled "The U.S. Government Wants to Crush My Twizy."
Yes.
That's right. We'll start calling you.
I feel like if I get pulled over in the Twizy, the cop's going to be, "I'm so sorry for you. Have a nice day."
I'm sorry, sir. Yeah. Commiserations.
Yes. Be like, you must be having a rough life if you're driving this thing.
All right. So just to follow up on the price cut at Ford. So Volkswagen Group CEO came out after this, I believe, or around the same time, or this week anyway, and said they have no plans to cut prices to follow Tesla. And GM has looked at this, and they've actually lowered, they've given the Cadillac Lyriq a cheaper base trim with fewer features. They've also added some other things in other trims, like they've added leather as an option in some trims, which some of us don't think is a great idea, but there it is. But if the content is right to get it down. So I don't know if they're good. I guess they'll probably keep that plan. I don't know. I don't like that plan. I don't like the idea of decontenting something that's supposed to be a luxury vehicle to get it under a price cap thing. You know, I think people have to own their luxuriness.
Well, you don't have to buy it, Dom. You can buy the one that doesn't qualify, but maybe somebody that wants a Lyriq and that extra 7,500 is going to make or break them. Well, right. Now they can get one. So I'm not, I think it's good. Fine. Right. Offer different options, different content. That's I'm totally fine with that.
Okay.
Big news.
Yeah.
Just got an email.
Okay.
Electrify America price increases.
We knew that. I mean, yeah.
So it's now 48 cents a kilowatt hour rack rate, which is still pretty cheap.
How about plus?
No, that's a lot.
Plus is 36. No, it's really not bad. So in Dom, Ionity is like 90 cents a kilowatt hour.
It's still less than what Tesla charges around here for the superchargers.
Yeah, 36 cents a kilowatt hour is very reasonable.
Well, 36 cents is not bad. I mean, it's a lot, but it's not terrible. No,
you pay $4 a month for it. So if you charge once, you make the break even.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah, that's really not bad, but there's the news. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's great. That
message.
So last week, we told you that the CEO of Toyota, Akio Toyoda, was stepping down, and we wondered if there would be any big changes to its perceived lack of enthusiasm for electric vehicles. Well, wonder no more. At least, it seems for the time being, at least, Toyota will continue to push a multi-pronged approach of hybrids, hydrogen, and some all-electrics. According to its chief scientist, Gil Pratt, more CO2 can be saved by using the limited amounts of lithium in smaller hybrid batteries than big EV batteries. Apparently, he may have been inspired to reach this conclusion after realizing that he only drives 30 miles a day or so. So 90% of his Tesla Model X battery was just dead weight. He also criticized other automakers' electric ambitions, calling them happy talk, saying their forward-looking statements usually have an asterisk that say something like if conditions permit. Okay, so personally, I don't think automakers like GM and Volkswagen and Mercedes are investing many billions of dollars to change the direction of their product lines. I don't think that can be just called happy talk. Sure, they might use qualifiers in some of their languages but we can see by the size and scope of their investments that they do intend to go through with their plans. But before we get too deep into this, I also wanted to point out that Auke Hoekstra, a well-known Dutch researcher who has a big presence on Twitter, he focuses on electric vehicles and renewable energy. And he has a lot of great threads, actually. If you're on Twitter, he's a great follow. So we're pointing out that he has got this typical He's got this great thread. It's focused on the scarcity of lithium, part of Pratt's argument. But Tom, what do you think of this hybrid is better argument anyway?
Well, it's no different. This is what Toyota's been saying all along.
Yes.
And we've talked about why. It's because they make great hybrids. Toyota makes the best hybrids in the world. They sell the most hybrids in the world. It's their cash cow. So, of course, they're going to denigrate alternatives, things that are better than hybrids. You know, we know their marketing over in the UK is, you know, we choose not to plug in. So this is just them trying to back it up with facts, you know, inventing right. their own facts or doing their own, you know, studies. Look, you can almost prove anything is true, even if it's not true. If you spend enough money and you hire a certain professional that'll say something that might not, that's his opinion. And, you know, you always have to look at where the studies are funded to really from to see what the result is. So, you know, this is, we've seen this a million times. It's nothing new in my opinion. It's just Toyota realizing the end of their cash cow is coming and they're trying to put it off as long as possible. It's utter bollocks, as they said in the tweet.
I don't know, Martin. I don't know. So you're not the
Martin
biggest.
Might get a suit here, depending on.
You're not the biggest Toyota fan we know. And we've seen these arguments before too. I mean, this is kind of their standard boilerplate, you know, hybrids and tradition. And they have good points in some places. You know, hybrids have saved a lot more CO2 going into the atmosphere than electrics have at this point, because there's just so many of them, for one thing.
Yeah.
And it's true that, you know, if everyone drove plug-in electric hybrids, there would be less lithium used, but then there would also be a lot, like, more carbon burned as well. So, but I don't even know how to, what are some of the, like, obvious holes in this? Because I know there's some issues with, like, for one, the people don't necessarily use plug-in electric hybrids like we think they would, right?
I mean, yeah. So this is Toyota's argument, because it's all they've got left. Because if they had EVs to sell, they'd be selling them. And they can see the writings on the wall. And so they're recommending that we carry on burning fossil fuels, which emit pollutants, which kill people. Millions of people every single year. And sometimes you have to make exceptions when you don't know better. In the 1950s, doctors prescribed cigarettes if you went in with a sore throat. Now, maybe those doctors did know better, maybe they didn't, and some of them are getting backhanders, or, you know, call it what you want, in financial incentives from tobacco manufacturers. Yeah. But you could make an argument that some of them didn't know that in 40 years, the people that went to them to get better, they were killing them. How awful is that? You went to the doctors to get better. Your doctor was killing you by prescribing cigarettes. But we know better. We know that burning fuel causes a range of illnesses. It gives babies asthma. It gives children awful, awful diseases in vitro. We know, all the data is there, that from people who live close to high polluted areas caused by cars and trucks, and this is normally people typically of a lower income, and often as well in the US, loads of data on people of color have to live in areas with higher pollution. And we know, this is not like, oh, this might be happening. We know this is happening. We are killing people by burning fuels. So if the boss of Toyota wants to go stand in his garage and lock the door and turn a petrol car on for 24 hours and see how he feels when he comes out, if he comes out after 24 hours, he's welcome to do that. I don't really want to do that. But what is bothering me most about Toyota now, like, the whole we choose not to plug in thing is fine. Like, they can spend their money how they want. They can spend untold amount of money to say, if you drive an EV, you're a loser, which is what they're doing. Like, they have shots of people in the desert just standing by their electric car as a plug-in speeds past, right? Because as a hybrid speeds past, because you're a loser if you own an EV. But what bothers me most is how much money they're going to spend being aggressive towards people like us who just want a better, cleaner, greener future. Now, will everybody in the future drive an EV? No. Like, I love Formula One. And we heard the news today that Ford are re-entering Formula One with Red Bull. You know, Ford are going to have an electric future, but Ford will go racing in Formula One. I enjoy racing. I was at Silverstone Circuit yesterday watching some cars go around, some fabulous Porsches and Caterhams and all sorts. It was a brilliant day. And you know what? We still ride horses. So this is Toyota saying, like, this is their end of days. They're now labeling anyone who doesn't think the same as them as an EV extremist. And, like, what's Toyota's problem with people like us? Now, we get, 10,000 people watch this podcast in the YouTube video, about the same listen to the audio version. Like, as a percentage of Americans, like, we are Nobody. Like, we're not even a rounding error. Like, we're here every week talking about electric vehicles. We like it. It's fun. This is our kind of our hobby, our life, for some of us, our living. Why did Toyota want to extinguish us and call us EV extremists? There's something very un-American about it as well. Like, if there's something, like, if you don't think like we do, then you are wrong. And it's a bit like, you know, sometimes you have an argument with someone, you know, and they won't. Like, sometimes, let's just agree to disagree, Toyota. We'll have electric cars. You go burn stuff. We'll see how it all shakes out. But now they want to go on the offensive and the attack. And everyone watching this and in the comments and enjoying this and who enjoys electric vehicles, you are now an EV extremist, according to Toyota. We are on the wrong side of history. No, I don't like any of it.
I have to interrupt just for a second, because I'm not sure. Maybe you have a better hold on this than I do, but I didn't. I think we have the word extremist in our headline. I couldn't find any text of him saying that. Maybe he did. I don't know.
Well, I'm sorry.
I don't think he called us extremist. I read that headline.
If they didn't use that word, I'm sorry. I didn't want to put words in Toyota's mouth. Right. But if they want to go and do their thing, they can do their thing. We can do our thing. It's all fine. I'm not going to lose any sleep. If they want to make hybrids, it doesn't, like, we know the way it's going. It doesn't bother me. I don't know why Toyota got such a bee in their bonnet. I don't know why they hate us so much.
I just want to have Martin's quote of Toyota wants to extinguish us as my text message tone.
Just leave us alone. Like, I'm more than happy doing stuff. And like that, there is like a serious side to it. Like when we found out that cigarettes kill people, in 40 years time, there's things you can do about that. So we started to say to people, look, if you smoke, you'll die from lung cancer. And people are like, I kind of like cigarettes. So there's things you can do. Like, you can tax them more, you can make money for your healthcare system so that in 40 years time, you can pay for those people. And so at some point you do have to intervene. And the overwhelming evidence that by burning fuels, we know we're doing the wrong thing. And so there does need to be some intervention. And I think Toyota are upset because regulators all around the world are moving to EV and they're just not ready to. So there's a massive PR campaign now. So whether it's at a local level, regional, government, EU, the US, federal level, whatever, to say, like, you're wrong. But that is the wrong thing to do, because we know better now. We do know better. So if we make the wrong decision, now we know better. That's on you. So if you want to carry on driving a combustion car, it's fine. We can still be friends. Like, if someone can, you know, go around coal rolling EVs, if that makes them feel better, it's okay. We can still be friends. Like, man, but why Toyota want to wade in on this and say that, you know, the EVs are bad or whatever? Just leave us alone.
Right. I think basically they really want to just defend their approach, you know, because they have like hybrids and hydrogen and you know, and EVs. They have a big slate of EVs coming, they say.
I mean, they do or they don't. I don't spend any time apart from the last five minutes and this rant, for which I apologize, sort of.
No.
I don't spend any other time thinking about Akio Toyota. Like, I'm not out there at night thinking, damn you with your hybrids. Like, you carry on, my friend. Like, what I don't like is when you say, like, EVs are bad. Like, what's bad about them? There's, like, this week, Tesla and Audi were talking about their battery passports, where they, you know, if you ask Toyota, What's the carbon emissions of that indicator stalk or that widget? You know, car makers are brilliant at bringing together third-party suppliers, and they put all the bits on the car and they make a car, and it's wonderful. Whereas the battery passports recently that Tesla and Audi are part of, from every stage of what goes into a battery, so the greenhouse gas emissions of mining those materials, all of them, processing all of them, transporting them around the world. So these battery passports now, which are going to be very, very common in the future, will give you a complete indication of the impact of making an EV battery. I'm very comfortable that all of the big car makers ensure that we're not using cobalt from mines that are exploiting people or miners in certain areas. And so, like, you go check out what's inside the lithium-ion batteries of your personal electronics that you got cheap from China, right? And then you worry about what's inside an EV battery. The big EV car makers have cleaned up their supply chains years ago, and are doing more about it. And so I'm just not worried. I'm not worried that my EV, which multiple studies, okay, he's a great person to follow on Twitter, but whether you want to look at the Department of Energy, the MIT studies that have been done, that pull together how many miles you have to drive a typical EV for until it becomes, you know, equal to a combustion car. Because there is a bigger carbon footprint. I hate that phrase because it was invented by the fossil fuel industry and a marketing agency, but still, to make us all feel guilty about our carbon footprint. But use that phrase for now, even though it was invented to make us feel guilty. Even though it's bigger to buy an EV on day one, as soon as you start driving it, it gets cleaner every day. And if that EV is in Poland or you know, somewhere that in the US that burns lots of coal, I'm trying to think of a state that
Wyoming, Colorado,
Virginia, lots of coal. You transport that car to Norway, where it's all hydroelectric, and it's entirely different thing. So, it's not an issue that I particularly care what Toyota think, but I really hate it when someone comes at me because I don't share their worldview. I'm like, it's okay, Toyota, we can be friends. Just stop having a go. Just stop insulting people who love electric vehicles. We're over here doing our thing. We're nobody. Forget about us, Toyota. Forget about electric vehicles. But don't come and attack us.
So just to touch on that little thing, I'm sure this is that shared. So this study came out a little while ago, and it actually makes a case that electric vehicles are already ahead of gasoline combustion vehicles right at the beginning of production. As far as CO2, they have lower CO2 at the beginning of production than gas vehicles, using a pricing method of looking at. Anyway, I just thought I'd pull it up. There's a study in Nature. You can Google that and find it. Anyway,
so I don't want to just leave me alone, Toyota. I never want to hear from them again, see them again. I don't want them to appear in my advert feed when they're advertising their, you know, we choose not to plug in thing. Right. And at some point they'll have to come out and say, well, we want to sell electric cars now. And then people will either get over it or they won't. I'll never spend my money on one, but it's fine. We can all just crack on. And but I really, really hate the way that Toyota is, you know, the number one spender in the automotive industry in the USA on lobbying. And you can just imagine what they're spending all that money on lobbying for. Now, we have a different political system over here. Don't get me wrong, there's still money involved and stuff. It's a different way to what you guys do, which is like, okay, so you want me to raise your issues to other politicians, open your checkbook. Like, why are Toyota the number one spender of lobbying? Because they don't like the change that's happening. They want to hold on to the old world. And I really hate that, because we know the damage that combustion is doing. And it's a false logic to try and, the cliche is FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, right? And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to obfuscate all the science and say, oh, well, hang on. It's exactly, you know, watch any of the documentaries that have been made about climate change over the years, because 98% of scientists agree, you know, and then they go, but what about the 2%? And that's all that's needed. Like the Al Gore documentary points out, that's all that's needed for most people to go, maybe they got a point. Well, maybe climate change isn't real. So that's exactly what Toyota's doing here. They're trying to sow a little seed of doubt in people's minds. And best thing is to do, like school bullies in the playground, like, just ignore them. They're just lonely, sad people.
All right. So on that note.
Was that okay?
That was great.
Okay, awesome. Fine. Great.
You're awesome. I feel like I've earned
my money today.
You're the best.
Not that we get paid for this, but I feel like you've got good value today.
So a couple little things before we end real quick. This one is a little positive news. I want to give you this, and this is in Europe. So the Zeekr 003 compact SUV has been teased as the brand's first EV coming to Europe. So you'll have Zeekrs coming to Europe, and they have a lot of the Lincoln Co. styling language. They're both owned by Geely. And it's a great looking little car. And maybe if you're tired of your Kona next year, you can buy something like this. And yeah, I'm not sure if you're watching this on if you're not watching this on YouTube, we just pull up a picture of this from the Inside EV's website. Zeekr 003 compact SUV teased as brand's first EV coming to Europe. So that's great to see some choice from China coming over there. Some other little quick things. The GMC Hummer EV SUV has entered production, and deliveries will start in the spring. The first one was already sold at an auction for, like, as I tend to do, like $500,000. Someone, but I don't know, it's like a odd ritual with like new cars sometimes. So we'll put the first one up for auction, raise a bunch of money for causes.
The first Hummer EV pickup truck went for $2.5 million 2 years ago. So wow. this didn't fetch nearly that amount, I guess, because that was the first Hummer EV.
Right.
But it's all good for charity. They do raise this for charity. So,
right. Do any of you guys have one of these coming? Anyone?
No.
Martin?
Imagine that.
Well, actually, Alyssa really wants this.
Oh, yeah? Has she driven,
Yeah, she drove the pickup truck around.
Okay.
Pretty much. It was so funny. Every time I try and go somewhere, the pickup truck was taken. And I'm like, I got to go film with it. And she's out driving it around.
Awesome. It's so fun. Oh, my God. That's awesome. Let's see. What else? Someone say, Nissan tells U.S. dealers Aria will be in limited supply this year. Oh, my God.
What a disaster.
Speaking of Aria, they're on sale. I don't know if anyone knew this. You can buy one.
Right. They started selling just before the new year.
Okay. Well, my friend Jen found one in California, and there's a viewer of Colton's Out of Spec Detailing channel that's driving one here from Wisconsin to have Colton detail it. So we're going to have a whole in-depth Aria series with that. It'll be really kind of interesting, actually.
Nice. It's good to see. I mean, it's the Aria is such a frustrating vehicle because they unveiled it originally at the Tokyo Motor Show in 2019, and it's been delayed and slow, and now it's finally coming out, but it's, you know, limited production. I think they've already made most of the ones they're going to sell already this year. At least the front-wheel drive ones. They have the e-Force all-wheel drive ones will begin production pretty soon, I believe.
Oh, so they're not even all-wheel drive yet?
No, they started with the front-wheel drive.
What the heck is going on at Nissan? Do they not understand?
I don't get it either.
Martin just went on a Toyota rant. I'm ready to go on a Nissan rant.
Okay.
First of all, why have they not released a CHAdeMO to CCS adapter?
Yeah. Right. Oh, there's so many things with Nissan.
They're doing a huge disservice to the EV, early EV adopters, by not either retrofitting CCS on older Leafs, which would be, I think, the smartest thing to do, or creating an adapter. I've seen CCS to CHAdeMO adapters. They exist. Is it legal with the standards? I don't know. So just let me swap out the port on my car, or someone aftermarket do it. But just crazy. But thankfully, Aria is CCS. Yes. I don't think I mentioned that. So funny. At Nissan, they'll have to install CHAdeMO and CCS stations to fast charge cars.
At the dealerships.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're going to keep selling the Leaf with CHAdeMO for a little while longer, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy. Bad. But yeah. So what else we got? Oh, this is a weird one. I'm even kind of hesitant to mention it, but the Hyundai Ioniq 6 receives impressive EPA ratings. I think it was like 361 miles or something EPA. I don't think it's on the EPA site yet. I saw something on our team chat this morning that there's some people calling these numbers into question. So there's still some, I'm not fully confident in the validity of these numbers. I even posted it up on the EV Inside EVs forum.
Saying Hyundai says it does that mileage in a EPA test and it doesn't?
I'm not sure where the numbers came from originally. I need to dig into the story and get all the facts, because we have, you know, we published Hyundai Ioniq 6 receives impressive EPA range ratings, 361 miles, 18-inch wheels, rear-wheel drive version of this with the big battery. But then there was something on Twitter this morning. Someone was saying some of the math doesn't really pencil out properly, you know, because there's huge differences in wheel size ranges.
Oh, but that's not unlike the rest of their cars.
Right. I have to dig into it. I'm not sure. Like, this is someone making a claim. So someone I want to kind of investigate it before I get too...
Oh, I think it's probably legit. Someone told me that they ran the 5-cycle test in this car, which is the same test that Tesla uses.
Okay.
And so they're also, there's a, you know, really, you can, anyone can download it. It's called J1634. And there's a, 2010 or let me just make sure, 2021 amendment. Yeah. Four of 2021, it's been revised. And it's basically the battery electric vehicle energy consumption and range test procedure. And it lists all of the roads like US06 and all of the cycles that they go through. They're also offering now a new 50% option where you drain the car from 100% to 50% and then use an offboard battery drainer for the rest, which I think is totally, fraudulent, because batteries will have different capacity based off of how much energy or how quickly you pull energy out of it, which would simulate a drive cycle. So I really think, you know, our testing procedures are just scams in the first place. But it's all available. It's like, I don't know how much it is, a couple hundred bucks. You could buy the thing J1634 and you can see what the difference is between the test cycles.
I see that on the, it's on the SAE.org website.
Yep.
Okay. Right on. All right.
But to Dom's point, just to point out the difference, the rear wheel drive long range version was 300. They're claiming 361. I don't know if someone's claiming it. I don't know if it was Hyundai, but the limited, all-wheel drive is 270. So that's 91 miles. More miles for having the rear wheel, just the single motor and the smaller wheels, the 18-inch wheels. That's a huge difference.
But the percentage difference between rear wheel and all-wheel is the same as Ioniq 5.
It's a little more than 25%.
But Ioniq 5 is like 50-something mile difference between rear-wheel drive and all-wheel drive?
I don't have the exact number, but you think it's 26% or something like
that? Yeah, I think it's somewhere around there. Yeah, something like that. Because it was like 300 miles versus 250.
Yeah. It's a big gap.
Yeah, and if it is true, again, this is an incredibly efficient vehicle. 361 miles with a 77 kilowatt hour battery is ridiculous. I mean, that's, you know.
We'll have to do some actual real world tests.
You know, more efficient than a Model 3.
Yeah, but if they ran the five-cycle test, it's going to be unfortunately, Hyundai's always, I think, been very they've used cycle tests that reflect a reasonable range of the vehicle in the U.S. Yeah. I think, you know, Kona owners, my dad, he had a couple Konas early on. He was getting over 300 miles driving around the city, unbelievably efficient, way more than rated. I think that might not be the case for this car if they ran the five-cycle.
Right. All right. So I think that might bring us to the end of our show. Anyone want to add anything else quick? No. Okay. So if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, love those thumbs up. Thank you. Please subscribe and hit that bell icon for notifications. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog, that's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is Kyle Connor. And click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. And thank you very much for joining us. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.